Welcome back to our interview with Ken Wilber, one of the most influential people in the field of consciousness studies in modern times. This is part two, and today we talk about the transition to so-called second-tier stages of human development. Ken comments on the metamodernism movement and identifies the people who embody second-tier thinking right now. You can find all the links and show notes from this episode at futurethinkers.org/110. Hey, and welcome to futurethinkers.org, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and consciousness. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. If you're new to the show and you want to get a list of our favorite books, popular episodes, and to join our community, go to futurethinkers.org/start.
I'm interested to know about some of the transition points and what you see reflected in today's conversations in postmodernism and metamodernism. There's one thing I've noticed. You brought up Jordan Peterson. A criticism of him is that he uses the language of green to attempt to deconstruct green. And to me, that seemed like an integrative thing to do, but people seem to understand it as he's operating from green, therefore that's the level he's at. So I wanted to know what your perspective was on the tools of deconstruction for the level that people are at that they use within that level. So using green to deconstruct green, orange to deconstruct orange.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, you mentioned the people at Rebel Wisdom, which is, I think, a terrific site, and they're an important part of this large thing that's called the Intellectual Dark Web. And they had carried an article that said, in essence, something like Ken Wilber and Integral best explains the rise of the Intellectual Dark Web. And so they wanted to do some interviews with me. And I eventually said, fine. And so they came out and we did a nonstop 5-hour interview discussion. And then they put it up as sort of three individual presentations on their website. And probably the question that we spent the most time on and that they were most concerned with is, well, first of all, their specific website was founded because of Jordan Peterson. So obviously they had an interest in his work and what he was saying. But what bothered them is what he really was emphasizing, whether it sounds like he was using green or even using second tier, but the values he was particularly emphasizing in terms of equal opportunity and individual freedom were values that came from this orange, world-centric, enlightenment stage of development. And they were concerned because they didn't think that was sounding integral enough. And they thought that if he was coming from integral, that he would have to include that green postmodern stage. But all he did was attack that. So he was really coming from orange, and because he didn't include green, and that was a problem. And so what I tried to convey was that I actually thought that Jordan and a very large percentage of the people on the intellectual dark web, I think they really are, in most cases, coming from this integral second tier stage at whatever degree of that. But again, the point about that whole second tier stage or stages of development is that it really does work with wholeness. I mean, that's what it looks for. It's trying to find unities, the way things fit together. And it doesn't have the mentality of almost every first tier structure. And by the way, that first tier, that's about 95% of the world's population. And the single sort of common factor with all of those is indeed, I think I'm right, everybody else is wrong. And so the common pursuit of a discipline at a first tier stage is, let me gather the evidence showing I'm right, and then everybody who disagrees with me is wrong. That's just sort of how that works. But at second tier, it's almost always questions like, how can everybody be right? Everybody's got some, I mean, the human brain isn't capable of producing 100% error. I always say nobody's smart enough to be wrong all the time. So the views that people have, they have to be true but partial. And that's the problem. So the question isn't how to get rid of them. It's how to take that truth and fit it with all the other truths. What kind of framework can do that? Because they all exist out there. They're already existing together. So how do you ask that kind of question? And those are the kinds of questions that most of the people in the intellectual dark web, those are the kinds of questions they ask. And one of the things that will happen if you move in, at least cognitively move into second tier integrative systemic structures, is that you'll not only start looking for wholeness yourself, but you'll also look around out there and try to see what's absent or what's being taken away, that if it was there, it would help with this wholeness. And the thing that's getting shortchanged, particularly by postmodern extreme left political orientation, is orange values themselves: equal opportunity, free speech, individuality. Those values are being denied by green postmodernism. And that will drive that categorical attack on orange values, when orange values are so clearly need to be included in an overall framework. That will just drive second tier slightly nuts. And so it's just going to look out there and see this massive attack on orange. What are you guys doing? You're using all of those rights for every single thing you say. And yet all you're saying is that those rights aren't important. I mean, it's just a huge contradiction. And so most people that are attacking postmodernism, including Jordan Peterson, will see it as just a byproduct of what's usually called, it's a type of neo-Marxist infiltration of the culture, that Marxism tried originally by talking about class structure that failed miserable ways during World War I. I mean, poor French people fought against poor German people, fought against poor Italian people. There wasn't a workers of the world unite kind of thing going on. And so the Marxists went, well, to hell with that. And so starting in the 60s, people like Herbert Marcuse, they started infiltrating culture with this notion of identity politics, just identify with that. The problem there with that particular view is, first of all, that's a very neo-Marxism, to the extent that has any meaning at all. That's a fairly sophisticated conceptual notion. And it's not likely, the number of people that have postmodern values, I mean, if you actually look at studies in the United States, for example, you have upwards of 23% of the population at green postmodern stages of development. So that's where those postmodern values are coming from. And that's why that fairly significant number of people have those values. If they had those values because neo-Marxism had just seeped out of higher college education and it seeped out into the culture until it bushwhacked 20% of the population, that would be a really neat trick to pull off. And I just don't think most people run around saying, okay, what's the leading edge notion coming out of college that I can identify my values with today? Oh, look, here's these green postmodern values. Let me identify with those. But if that's the stage of development that people have to go through on their own overall development, that will explain it much, much better. And also just the very structure of green, to actually look at the test results of all of the different researchers that have studied it, you really do see values that represent these extreme, green, far left political views. So you really do get this kind of, it's an egalitarian orientation, whereas orange is meritocracy. It believes in equal outcome. It looks at all groups, and if it sees any group ahead of any other group, then it maintains the group that's ahead is oppressing the other. It's just power, and that's all it is. And that's the only way it's interpreted. Whereas orange has equal opportunity. And those, of course, are the values that Jordan stresses and even people like Ben Shapiro stress those values, again, because they're getting bushwhacked from postmodern green with its radical egalitarian. It replaces individual justice with social justice. It replaces equal opportunity with equal outcome. So that can be explained much better than some sort of cryptic neo-Marxist viewpoint slipping out and infecting housewives in Minneapolis. I mean, so what is happening is, in my opinion, and this is what I attempted to get across in our discussions of Rebel Wisdom, is that as people grow and develop, so as you, each stage becomes a part of the higher stage. It's actually the whole of one stage becomes a part of the whole of the next stage. It's very much like, you know, going from atoms to molecules, from molecules to cells, cells to organisms. Each one of those whole atoms become part of whole molecules become part of whole cells. That just continues it right into human development and in our interior stages as well. And so if we hadn't gotten to the point where we had denied a lot of these interior realities and we're just reducing everything to its exterior interlocking, interwoven material systems, we would be tracking these interior stages. But what happens is, even if somebody moves from orange through green into second tier, into these integrated stages, they're actually including the basic elements of orange and green in their own makeup, in their own structure. Orange and green have become parts of a larger whole at second tier. And so they're using green, even if they're not consciously aware of that, and even if they consciously don't like that. Because what they like is wholeness. And you certainly see that in Jordan Peterson, for example. I mean, he's, even though he's a clinical psychologist and his job for most of his adult life has included seeing clients as a therapist and working with their emotional problems. And then he taught psychology at Harvard, taught at University of Toronto. So you would expect him to be a kind of scientific guy. But here's a guy who gives like 50 hours of lectures on the meaning of Genesis. I mean, he really, and he argues very carefully. He knows that there's a waking up consciousness and knows that there's a growing up consciousness. So he's using all of these components. And that's what I see happening on the intellectual dark web too, by the way. And I think that's why, as they pointed out, that just sort of this integral background has kind of become the language of the intellectual dark web. So what we're looking to see right now is some way for this kind of awareness to become more widespread. Because again, the data for it, the evidence for it is overwhelming. And more importantly, it really is showing adult human beings ways that they can continue their own growth and expansion and development and their own higher potentials. These are being robbed from people right now because the actual evidence we have for them is just not being put out there. And that's just really horrifying. I mean, I don't care if you look at the whole integral framework and then go, oh, I don't believe any of it. That's fine. But you should know that you do have these potentials. They are out there. And there are a staggering number of extremely competent researchers that have the evidence to prove it. And so this is something you might want to look into.
What a lot of our audience really wanted to hear your commentary on metamodernism and Hanzi Freinet and their claim that they are post-integral, that they transcend and include integral. What do you think of that?
Well, I haven't seen any believable presentation that they're actually transcending and including integral, because there are aspects of integral that I don't think they're touching very well. And the aspects that they claim they're introducing are ones that you can find in types, for example, in integral theory. So one of the one of the difficulties that I've found with the whole integral framework, and I've been working on this now for about 50 years. I mean, I've been doing this for a while. So I have a lot of experience with how people react to it and how they respond to it. And one of relatively common ways is that because so many of the aspects of integral theory, or it's often called integral meta theory, is that, again, most people just don't know about these various areas. And we sometimes refer to them with things like waking up, growing up, showing up. We also have sort of names for some of the areas like quadrants and levels and lines and states and types. And because a lot of people just aren't aware of these other areas of their own being, their own potential, their own awareness, they can get very, very excited by it. And then one of the relatively common things, and we would see this in some of the professional journals, is they would take integral meta theory and they would include implicitly about 95% of it. And then they would add sort of 5% something different and then claim that 5% was the new integral theory and the old one, you didn't need it anymore. And I've seen that truly dozens of times. The meta-modern response is not new. I've seen it many, many times. And I have yet to see a case where it's turned out to be actually the case that you could, well, simply call this new approach. Oh yeah, that's the new integral. As I say, I keep adding aspects to the integral framework, wherever I find them. So some of my students, for example, have actually named the various types of frameworks that I've put forth as Wilbur 1, Wilbur 2, Wilbur 3, Wilbur 4, Wilbur 5. And so we've gotten up to Wilbur 5. And I hope to get to at least Wilbur 6 or 7. The one good thing I can say about all of those is that all of them are including the true aspects of the previous one. So Wilbur 5 includes all the good stuff in Wilbur 4 and Wilbur 3 and Wilbur 2 and Wilbur 1. So I think that's what's important about it. And whatever name we end up using for any of these frameworks, I honestly don't care about that. What I care about is getting the truths that we're incorporating, getting those better well known. Because those are the not deniable aspects of these theories, these meta-theories, these models. And those are exactly the things that are not getting, as I've been saying, they're just not getting much attention nowadays, even though there's something as important as ultimate truth. And I mean, we just don't hear about that kind of stuff. And it's like, really? You really want to have a culture that has no bloody idea what ultimate truth is? You really just want to have a bunch of relative truths wandering around? That just doesn't sound that exciting to me. Actually, it sounds like a big, big mistake and something that's going to cause a lot of problems. I don't care what name we end up calling these things, as long as we end up actually including all of these truths and getting the word out on those.
There's definitely the problem of people wanting to kind of stand out by just adding that five, you know, standing on the shoulder of giants thing, want to add that tiny little bit to and rebrand it so that they build their own personal brand. I didn't really see a whole lot of new content from that.
I would be delighted if I was a giant on whose shoulders future humanity sat. That would be fine with me. That's sort of a definition of evolution. Is evolution just keeps going forward. And one of the ways the integral defines each stage of evolution is that it transcends and includes its predecessor. And that's just a stunning realization. And it really makes an enormous amount of sense about so much of what happens. And so the whole idea, I mean, we're doing it moment to moment. We're including our previous moments, and then we're adding something new in every single moment. As Alfred North Whitehead would say, there's a bit of novelty that's added to our apprehension. So we engage all of our past, but in every moment, and this includes every individual thing that exists, including electrons and protons and atoms, but they not only are to some degree caused by their past, they then, even if they are largely caused, they still add a little bit of novelty. They add a bit of newness to that equation. And then that's what gets passed forward, is that little bit of novelty and its causality. And then that becomes the next event that's apprehended, transcended, and included. And we see that happening from the moment of the Big Bang all the way up to today. And when human beings first emerged, Homo sapiens, we now have skeletal remains. We used to think they're around 200,000 years old. Now it looks like it's about 300,000 years old. Of course, our ancestors, Homo habilis and nice folks like that, maybe back a million years. But modern humans are 300,000 years old. And what happened when that brain physiology emerged in our present day bodily structure emerged is we kept growing and developing, just as all sentient life before us had, by going through these interior stages of growth and development. And so we did go from an archaic phase into a magic phase, and then from that into a mythic stage, and from mythic into a rational. Rational was basis of modernity. We moved into post-modern stages, and now we have a leading edge of humanity that's moving into second tier integrated integral stages. And so those people are the ones that are asking these kinds of questions. And they don't just want to know, okay, which view is right and all the others are wrong. They want to know, how do you put them all together? Because they all fit together and they're supposed to be together. And when you do that, you get an overwhelming amount of goodness and truth and beauty. And so that's what's just so astonishing. And I think that will just continue going forward as well. So like I said, I'm glad to be part of the shoulders of giants if we can get that happening.
The brand new Future Thinkers members portal is now live. Develop your sovereignty and self-knowledge with our in-depth courses, get access to our weekly sense-making calls, join the Q&As with past podcast guests, and much more. Become a Future Thinkers member today at futurethinkers.org/members. To stay up to date with new episodes, subscribe to Future Thinkers on your favorite platform. And leave us a review or a like. It really helps out the show. And don't forget to share this episode on social media.
One thing I've been noticing a lot lately is, first of all, are you familiar with Daniel Schmachtenberger's work and Jordan Hall and these kind of sense maker types?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So they talk a lot about this idea of cognitive sovereignty, your ability to look out in the world. Cognitive sovereignty.
Yeah.
Perceiving the world, sense making, and agency. And one thing I've noticed quite a lot coming to the West to go to conferences and stuff is that people seem to be increasingly willing to outsource their sense-making and sovereignty to external agents. And to me, it seems to be just kind of a phenomenon or a result of the increasing complexity in the world and the fact that we have all of these tools on the internet to be able to filter information and pick and choose what we want to pay attention to and become experts in. But as a result, a lot of people are choosing not to learn certain things like these more general connecting things like integral theory. And in doing so, they get stuck in this, I don't know, they get stuck in a way of thinking that is just seems to be pretty orange, rationalistic, and having a lot of problems transcending. So, I mean, I'm curious to know your thoughts about what to do about that, this problem of over-filtering and not being willing to
learn
do your own
yourself.
Sense-making.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of different ways of looking at that. And of all those areas that I mentioned about integral, ones that we've talked about are growing up and waking up. And then I said, we also do things like opening up and showing up and cleaning up. And all of these are having a type of impact on what you're talking about. But one of the major ways is if we look at just the growing up aspect of that in terms of just the developmental component of what's happening with some of those, is what you, if you look at people that have really studied an individual's cognitive development, which is essentially what we're talking about here, some of the best ones, for example, include a researcher named Michael Commons. And what Commons does, and I'll abbreviate this just a little bit, but starting at orange, it's what he calls a systemic worldview. And because what orange rationality can do is it really can think globally. So it can start to think about universal principles. And that's why it does start to create modern sciences, universal principles of physics and biology. So there's not Hindu biology versus Christian biology. There's just biology. That's an orange rational systemic point of view. And then when you move up to green, postmodern, because each of these stages transcend and include. Another way to talk about that is differentiate and integrate. So differentiate and integrate is also what's going on. And you see this as you look at, you know, just like a zygote starts out as a single cell, and that divides into four cells, differentiates, and those divide into 8, and then 16, and 32, and 64. And as that's happening, they start to integrate into different organ systems. So they're differentiating, integrating. And we find that in human development as well. So what happens as you continue to move up these stages is each higher stage can reflect on the previous stage so it can differentiate. And then at some point, you have to integrate those differentiations. So what happens with green postmodernism is that it differentiates all those systems that orange created. And when it does that, it will create a what Commons calls meta-systemic. And so meta-systemic differentiates all the orange systems, but it can't yet integrate them. And so what it'll do is it's differentiating all these things, is it'll look at like Western scientific truth and it'll go, wait a minute, you can't just say that's truth. All these other countries exist and they have truths that are just as important as ours are. So they end up supporting things like multiculturalism and diversity and so on, all of which is fine. But the point is, at this stage in development, they can differentiate all of those, but they don't know how to integrate them. And so they really often will end up in this sort of, well, you know, what's true for you is true for you, what's true for me is true for me, and that kind of thing. And then you have this leap to second tier. And Commons, like most typical Western developmental models, has includes about two or so major stages in second tier. And the terms he uses are not exactly the best use of the terms, but you'll get the point fairly quickly. So the first stage he calls, that can start to integrate these differentiations, he calls paradigmatic. So what he means by paradigm is simply an actual activity, an actual knowledge quest that can integrate what Green has differentiated. So you can actually start to produce whole integrated bodies of knowledge. And that's what a paradigm is, as he's using that term. And then after you have all these individual paradigms, then the next and highest stage, second tier, is what he calls cross-paradigmatic. And that's where you start looking at all the paradigms and attempt to bring them all together. And again, that's about less than 1% of the population. But some of the very, very bright folks who are talking about cognitive sovereignty are pushing into second tier. They're pushing into paradigmatic, which is sovereign into itself, or even cross-paradigmatic, which is sovereign in the sense that now it's working with a completely unified reality. And you can get a type of genuine sovereignty out of both of those. When you don't get a sovereignty of well, almost anything, is at Green, meta differentiated reality. And that's the real core of what we have with postmodernism. And so that's a lot of the problem, is that most of the leading edge of today's bright people, there are 3 or 4% of them at second tier, but there's 20 to 25% at Green. And that's postmodernism. That's the core of postmodernism. And that's the core of what a lot of that type of, well, I don't want to assert anything kind of statement comes, just in looking at developmental terms. There are other factors that play into that. But just in developmental terms, that's one of the main things that's happened. And what we find with the whole postmodernism in general is that it is these green, metasystemic, multicultural, diversity, egalitarian notions taken to extremes. And they become contradictory at that point. So it's common for postmodernism, for example, to claim that there is no objective truth, that that's just a cultural construction, and it doesn't actually exist as a reality. But what they're claiming, of course, is that their statement that there is no objective truth, that those are cultural constructions, they're claiming that is true. And they're claiming it's universally true, and they're claiming it's true for all people in all places at all times. You can't get more universal truth than that. But they, of course, deny there's any universal truth. If they really meant what they were saying, they wouldn't believe anything they were saying, because they're claiming it's truth, but they say there is no truth. And that's just the start. I mean, it's that kind of performative self-contradiction that is extremely, extremely common. I mean, even if you look at the great postmodern, recognized postmodern philosophers like Derrida or Foucault or Bourdieu and so on. Foucault actually wrote a book called The Archaeology of Knowledge. And that was because he had started out as a structuralist, who's somebody who actually studies these structures of these different stages of development. That's one of the things that Piaget, for example, made very famous. And Piaget, by the way, got it from James Mark Baldwin, the guy who discovered growing up. When Baldwin stopped teaching at Harvard and retired, he went to Paris and taught at Paris for a while. And one of the several famous students that he had was a Swiss student named Jean Piaget. And that's where Piaget learned about these kinds of things. So you have these types of postmodern philosophers. And what Foucault was doing, he had originally written some books looking at these different epistemes, these different worldviews that several major stages of European development had created. And so he was curious about how different cultures could have these different worldviews. So he wrote this book, The Archaeology of Knowledge. And he said he literally was at the end of that book when he realized that the whole book was a self-contradiction. Because what he was doing was, he was saying, these are the elements in the cognitive structure that produce these different worldviews. So he's claiming that these elements are the same in all these different worldviews. In other words, and as the claim of the book was that every culture has a different worldview, and you can't find anything they have in common. But what they all have in common is his book, if his book is correct. So he's contradicting himself. He's saying there is no common element to those cultures, except everything I'm saying. Everything in this book is common to all of these cultures, and that's where they had, and that's like, oops. That was the beginning of the postmodernist rampant self-contradiction. And it's a real problem. And it doesn't cure up until you get into second tier and start to realize how you can actually integrate all of those different types of cultural values. And it turns out you can, because some of them have more depth and some of them have less depth. Some of them are more inclusive. Some are less inclusive than others. And that's a scale of more inclusiveness. Happens to be the same scale that an individual in today's world, those are the same stages an individual will go through as they grow and develop. So we are finding some very important common themes that show up And these are one of them. What we do, the real problem right now is that we have a leading edge of culture that's essentially not just green and egalitarian and multiplistic, but it's a broken green. It's an extreme green. It takes its own views absolutistically. And that's a huge problem, because that is the sort of leading edge, starting in, well, in 1959, for example, in the United States, 3% of the population was at green, egalitarian, multiplistic, multicultural. By 1972, Jacques Derrida was the most frequently quoted academic in America, and the percent of the population at green had reached about 13 or 14% on its way to around 20%. And so postmodernism had become, again, sort of the leading edge. If you were smart and bright and you were born in the 60s or 70s and you wanted to sort of go to the head of the class, you developed a green. That was where you stopped. And that was how you looked at the world. And that was what was so important. By the way, it was right when that happened and academia itself became green, basically, in its leading edge. That's when developmental studies, those were all thrown out by this extreme green, because green doesn't recognize higher or lower in anything. Everything is absolutely equal. So if you have stages, even of more inclusiveness, you're racist or sexist or transphobe or xenophobe or misogynist, you're bad. You are a morally bad person. And they don't distinguish between dominator hierarchies, which are all the bad things they say about hierarchies, and growth hierarchies, which go from electrons to atoms to molecules to cells to organisms. And in human beings, they go from stage to stage to stage to stage. And growth hierarchies, the higher you are in a growth hierarchy, the more inclusive, the less oppressive, the less marginalizing you are. So even green values themselves, you're not born with green values. You have to go through at least six stages of development to get to a point where you think green values are great. But they didn't do that. They just put all hierarchies together, threw them all out as being, you know, Nazi. And that's the famous, that's the most common charge that you will get. If you mention any sort of hierarchies, you're a fascist, you're a neo-Nazi, you're a Hitler. It's like, it's unbelievable. So they tossed all of that out. So even people going through academia at that point, like a lot of people in the intellectual dark web, or even like Jordan Peterson, is growth developmental studies were just not part of the academic curriculum. And that's where they started to get left out of the picture. And that's part of the problem. And again, that's just part of what broken green is, part of the problem that it's left us with. So,
you know, it seems so interesting to me that a proper integration of orange and the application of orange to look at green and figure out the inconsistencies would set people on a track to second tier consciousness kind of naturally.
Yeah, well, it, part of the difficulty right now is that, well, let me put it the other way. One of the things that we can essentially anticipate in an optimistic way is what happens when 10% of the population starts to reach second tier. Because what appears to happen, if you look back historically, and again, we've just been talking about growing up stages a lot during this. There are a lot of other elements that, of course, an integral approach includes. But growing up is one that really gets left out a lot. And part of the difficulty with doing that is it simply cuts off access to these overall increasing and more inclusive aspects of our own awareness. So even something like green values, even if you're going to say, okay, I'm going to at least look at equal outcome and see if there's some sort of major disparities occurring there. Now, remember, somebody like Jordan Peterson or a large number of the intellectual dark web doesn't want to include equal outcome at all. They just want equal opportunity. And that's not a product of development. That's their own conscious decision, because they've looked around and seen orange values so decimated, and they start embracing those orange values. Then that's one of the choices that they make. But here's how something like equal outcome can be important. In around 1970, the percentage of college degrees in the United States that were gotten by men, by males, was about 69%. And the percentage of the degrees gotten by women was about 31%. And as a country, we sort of looked at that and said, that something's not right about that. Because by that time, we had laws against, if you discriminated against a woman getting into college, that was against the law. I mean, you could be fined or even go to jail if you did something like that. So we didn't have laws specifically holding women down. But still, this something just wasn't working here. So what was that? We had equal opportunity. Every law we had guaranteed equal opportunity, but still only 31%. This is something's not right. So we paid attention to equal outcome, and we decided that that was an important area that we wanted to give attention to. So we started creating classes that would encourage women to take up some of these kinds of studies, and did other social change maneuvers to help get a larger percentage of women through the college population. By 2015, the percentage of women getting college degrees had moved to almost 70%. And the percent of college students that were men was about 30%. So obviously, we changed that dramatically. And many people would say, well, oops, we went a little bit too far. We still have equal opportunity. But now equal outcome is just getting really jerked around bad. So now it's common to find that there are books with titles like The War Against Boys, The Boy Crisis, etc. And in many cases, it does appear that we went just a little bit too far, helped women along just a little bit too much while also holding males back. So what you want to do when you're at second tier and you're consciously paying attention to this is you want to balance equal opportunity with equal outcome. And that's a tricky maneuver, because equal opportunity is often just called freedom. Even though both of these are forms of equality, equal opportunity is often called freedom, because it means you have the freedom to, you know, attempt to do anything that you want to. And an equal outcome is called equality. So you have freedom and you have equality. And I think Alex de Tocqueville was one of the first to point out that because human beings are born with differences, then you can either have freedom or equality, but you can't have both. Now, in a sense, that's correct, because if you have just complete freedom, let's say to sign up for the National Basketball League, and there's actual equal opportunity, for various reasons, including the way they were raised or any number of factors you can mention, some 70 to 80% of the people playing that are African Americans. And there's almost no little short Jewish players playing basketball. So, but that's because there's complete freedom. The Jewish, short little Jewish player, he can try if he wants. He's got equal opportunity. He can try to get on the team, and occasionally some of them will. But if you're going to force the same number, then you're going to have to cut equal opportunity, and you're not going to let as many blacks on. So you can have freedom or you can have equality, but you can't have exactly both. They're contradictory in terms of what they're actually trying to do. So what you do want to do, as just the example of college degrees, is you do want to pay attention to both of those, because those are orange values and green values. They're equal opportunity and equal outcome. They're freedom and they're equality. And both of these clearly are important. And the real trick from second tier is that you want to balance those as fair a way as you possibly can. And the thing that I was mentioning just about what we can find historically on these stages is that when the leading edge of a stage, of whatever the stage is at that point in history, when it reaches about 10% of the population, then there tends to be a sort of tipping point, a kind of flip tends to occur. So the Western Enlightenment, the percentage of the people at orange when that happened was only about 10% of the population. But when that happened, then that rational, universal rational stage became the leading edge of our overall evolution. And that mythic ethnocentric previous stage, that was no longer the leading edge, this orange rational stage was. And so that's where we tended to replace mythic religion with rational science, and we developed world-centric values. We ended slavery. This was still only about 10% of the population. But what had happened is that when it does reach 10%, its values seem to sort of permeate the culture. At least people have heard of them and become a little bit more open to them. So the reason that slavery was ended, for example, is that this world-centric slavery is bad level had reached 10%. And that started to just filter through the culture. So they were open to ending slavery. We already saw that postmodernism, that hit when about 10% of the population hit green. Now, what we have worldwide, because that's still the highest stage that's hit 10%. So worldwide, we do have this sort of postmodern, multicultural set of values. And because of that, we're getting an intense polarization. And in part, this polarization is coming because everybody has their own truth. And so people just fly apart. And they're still first tier. So when a person has their own truth and they're a different group than somebody else, they often might think that these two are sort of at war with each other. It really does look like there's nothing but a power hierarchies everywhere. And this is horrible. So we've just gotten more and more polarized. Really, in certainly in the United States, some people are saying that this is as polarized as we've been since the Civil War. And the problem is, as we look around at culture at large, we don't see many depolarizing or anti-polarizing or unifying forces on the horizon. All we see is just more polarization. And so when we get 10% of the population starts at what we call teal, or the beginning of second tier, often called an integrated stage or even autonomous stage because of its sovereignty, that's going to be, and we get that tipping point, then those values are going to sort of seep through the culture. And we're going to have a counterbalancing force to this horrid polarization. And I think that's one of the most important things that's going to happen on these interiors that we no longer track very much. That's one of the most important things that's going to happen in the future. And that could happen as soon as 10 to 15 years from now, because it really is a leap, that cataclysmic, monumental leap of meaning from first tier to second tier. That's going to be something close to a cultural singularity. And that's going to happen at about the same time that people think there might be something like a technological singularity. If not an actual singularity, then a damn big technological machine, super intelligent machine. So we're going to get this sort of massive shift that's coming in anywhere from 15, 20 years. And that looks like it's just on track to happen. And we don't really have to do anything. It's simply headed this way. And that's going to be a very, very interesting time. It also would mean, by the way, that as at least 10% of the population moved into second tier integrated stages, that more and more individuals, including academics, would find integral models attractive. And not as many people would find my truth is true for me and your truth is true for you, and we can never get the two together. They're all incommensurable value systems, and all they can do is have power tyrannies between each other. That worldview is going to start dying down, and more integrated worldviews will very likely start. Now, it just depends on what the super intelligent machines are going to do. So we're going to have to program them to recognize as much truth as possible, or we'll definitely be in trouble.
All right, that was it for the second part of our interview with Ken Wilber. Stay tuned for the next part, where we talk about useful practices for waking up, growing up, cleaning up, and showing up for life. To find all the links and show notes from this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/110. Enter the Future Thinkers giveaway and win our brand new community membership, including in-depth courses, private calls, and more, as well as a supply of Qualia, a complete cognitive upgrade for your brain. To enter the contest, simply go to futurethinkers.org/giveaway and sign up for our mailing list to instantly get our 50-page guide on how to adapt to the future. There are many ways to increase your chances of winning. Enter the competition today. The brand new Future Thinkers members portal is now live. Develop your sovereignty and self-knowledge with our in-depth courses, get access to our weekly sense-making calls, join the Q&As with past podcast guests, and much more. Become a Future Thinkers member today at futurethinkers.org/members. To stay up to date with new episodes, subscribe to Future Thinkers on your favorite platform. And leave us a review or a like. It really helps out the show. And don't forget to share this episode on social media.